We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
I'm here. Tommy's here. Sorry about yesterday, but I'll make it up with a show over the weekend before the playoff games. Eight teams left in the NFL playoffs. Didn't have a chance, and I'm glad I get to do it with Tommy, in talking about the six playoff games that were played, including the game last night. Let me just start with kind of some breaking news. Jerry Jones skipped his normal Tuesday Dallas radio appearance. And apparently the last time he did that, Jason Garrett was fired a few days later. I had Mickey Spagnola. You know, we used to have him on the show. I've had him on the show a lot of times. He's covered the Cowboys forever. And he was adamant this morning saying he believes Stephen Jones yesterday when he said Mike McCarthy's not going to get fired. But I heard in Mickey's voice I'm pretty sure that I believe Stephen, but not entirely. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Mike McCarthy were fired this week. Jerry Jones looked devastated after that loss. And that team is just a poorly coached NFL team and has been, I think, for a while, and far underachieved their talent. But anyway, he skipped his radio appearance. Now, there may be a story that comes out sometime after we've been recording this podcast that says why he missed the radio appearance. But he missed it. How are you, by the way?
I'm doing great.
Awesome.
I'm in Miramar Beach, Florida, where, it's going to be 58 degrees and sunny today. Tomorrow, going up to 68 and sunny.
Oh, God.
You know, it's just, life is good. Life is good, you know? So I feel bad for you guys back there, because I get the impression that it's not sunshine and lollipops back in D.C.
I'm telling you right now, and I follow weather, winter weather in particular, when there's a storm. Most of you know that, or many of you that are listening know that. My preference, as I've gotten a little bit older, is if we're not going to have a big snowstorm to talk about in the winter months, I'd rather it be 65 and sunny. I'd much prefer that. Like the weather, you know, leading into Christmas, it was just so mild. I mean, New Year's Day was like 65 degrees. But you left at the exact right time. It has been cold. We've had already, I think, 12 to 14 inches of snow total, you know, in D.C. and more in other areas. And there's a big storm on one of the models. The Euro has a massive storm for the weekend. And then the American model, the GFS, is showing no storm, basically. So somewhere between like 0 and 30 inches on Saturday is the range. But it's supposed to snow tomorrow night into Thursday. And really, what any real weather person would tell you, like our good friend Sue Palka, who's retiring after 36 and a half years, And if I didn't say this on Friday's podcast or Saturday's, Sue was on the radio with me on Friday. Go find that interview at theteam980.com. She's just one of the best people of all time. But anyway, I digress. There's going to be just massive cold between now and early February. Like today and tomorrow will be some of the warmest days we've had. I think tomorrow is going to be in the 40s. I don't think we're going to see the 40s again until February. I mean, that's what the long-range forecast stuff is indicating. So you got out just in time. I just went out and I was like, I had to go somewhere real quickly, and I parked, and they're just big piles of snow in parking lots. You know, it's ugly, it's cloudy, it's chilly, it's winter. We haven't had winter the last two years, but we have it this year.
No, and well, let me ask you one thing about Sue. Does she get behind your candidacy to replace her on Channel 5 as the weather person?
I don't think she would get behind it, but I did not actually ask her whether or not she would get behind your push for me to be her replacement at Channel 5. I don't know.
Because I think that would lift your spirits if you could talk about the weather every night on TV. I think you'd be much happier about it.
I think there are things that I'd rather be talking about every night. But no, like nothing gets me more excited than the possibility of like a big snowstorm and tracking it and following it. Yes, I've always been interested in that. And the weather people in town have been very nice to me to sort of accommodate this obsession. You know, Doug Kammerer and I text back and forth all the time, and he was on the show. Sue, by the way, in the radio interview on Friday, she said, you know, over the years, she said, you've had like, you know, a steel trap memory when it comes to storms. And she goes, I've always relied on you, you know, for some of these big storms to sort of compare them to previous storms. And I said, and I told the story about you and I being at the Super Bowl, and I think we were out somewhere, and you looked down at my phone, and it said Sue Palka, and you just looked at me and said, why would she care what you think about the upcoming storm, especially since we're down in Florida? And she said, yeah, but you came back, right? And she remembered the whole story. She said, you.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Anyway, if you don't like winter, this is not your winter in D.C. right now. We're going to have, I mean, we've already had a two-week stretch of kind of brutal winter, and more is coming. Whether there's a big storm this weekend or not, it's just going to be cold. You know, like when you watch the local news and they put up the graphics that show the extended forecast, you know, the 10-day extended forecast, I was watching, and I don't know her name. She's Doug Kammerer's weekend or holiday.
She's good. I like her.
She's excellent.
Yes, I don't know her name either, but she's fabulous.
You're talking about the African-American young woman, right?
Yes.
Oh, she's
very good. She's really good on the air.
So good on the air. I don't know what she is as a forecaster at this point, but I think she's into the weather and probably a good forecaster. I don't know. I haven't watched enough of her. But I watched her part of this weekend, and I've seen her, you know, recently, and she's excellent on TV. You're 100% right. Anyway, she put up the 10-day extended last night because she was in for Doug, I guess, for the holiday. And seriously, like after tomorrow, there wasn't one day where the temperature was like above 32 for the next 10 days, you know? So it is really going to be cold. All the extended stuff says cold right through the end of January, if not into the early part of February, with lots of chances of potential snowstorms between, you know, over the next two and a half weeks. Now, this big one on the weekend, I mean, it's nobody knows.
I got her name, Samara Theodore.
What's her name?
Samara Theodore.
Samara, yeah. She's good.
Yeah.
She's
really
good.
Yeah, I want to make
sure
we got her name out there.
Yeah, she's excellent. Very likable. I will tell you over a period of time if I get to watch her more during these big events as to whether or not she's a good forecaster. I just haven't watched enough. I would assume,
right.
You know, sometimes you get these weekend people that just really aren't the forecasters that they're the top dogs are at the station. Like, Doug's a really good forecaster, a really good meteorologist. Sue is, Topper is. Sometimes on the weekends you get, you know, the Willard Scotts of the world. But I don't even think that's true anymore. I think the people on the weekend are all meteorologists. But she's excellent on the air, and I'm sure she's an excellent forecaster. Whatever. The bottom line...
Quick kissing up to your competition, the people you're going to be competing with soon when you're on Channel 5.
You know, seriously, I mean, because I worked in television very briefly when I was much younger, you know, what we do, what you do as a columnist, what you do and have done as a host of a radio show, co-host of a radio show, co-host of a podcast, I'm going to tell this story. About 2 years ago, I went into, what was her name? Erin, the chick at Channel 7. What was her last name? Hawksworth.
Erin Hawksworth.
Yeah. Erin loved you and me, you know, and had us on her show every once in a while. And I remember going,
right.
I remember going in there one night to do a hit. I think it was like a Sunday night following, you know, NFL games or whatever. So, you know, they're right over Key Bridge in Roslyn is where Channel 7 is. So I go in there, and I'm just hanging out in the waiting room, and she came out, and she said, hey, I want you to meet my producer, this guy. Hey, this is also my other producer. And by the way, the producers at Channel 7 are great. But I say that, and I'm being serious. But then there, you know, she had somebody else that was like part-time. And I just said, how many minutes is your sportscast tonight during the 11 o'clock news? I'm only going to get 4 minutes tonight. And I thought to myself, my God. I mean, no offense to these people because they have to have a certain look. They have to, you know, they got to be good on television and they got to look good on television. And you and I, we have faces made for radio. But, I mean, and I worked for Steve Buckhantz for a couple of years, one of my favorite people ever. But to do 4 to 5 minutes of a sports cast during a local newscast versus what we do, it's got to be the easiest gig of all time. And she had like 3 producers, and I was thinking to myself, my God. I mean, I probably wouldn't be very good doing, I think I could do sports on TV. I mean, I wouldn't be as good or look as good as, you know, the people. And there's a reason that some of those people are doing it. But, I mean, Scott told me this a long time ago. Remember when Scott was doing radio? Scott did, you know, a radio show with Ryan Russillo for years.
Yes.
On ESPN Radio. And when Scott got started doing radio at ESPN, you know, when he was hosting SportsCenters, he did a show with Mike Tirico. Both Tirico and Scott had that midday slot. And then Tirico decided, I forget how it worked out, but Tirico ended up getting more, you know, sort of play-by-play opportunities. And so Ryan became Scott's co-host. But I remember Scott saying to me after like a month of doing radio, talk radio, he just called me and he said, there is no debate. The hardest thing to do in sports broadcasting is long-form sports talk radio. He goes, it's not even close. And you know, Scott wasn't getting 4 minutes on a local sports cast. He's doing an hour sports center show, which is a much more... You know, that's a Herculean task compared to what a local sports talk. But when you're doing 3 hours or 4 hours a day every single day, you know, it is by the way, I'm not asking for any, you know, sympathy. I love doing this, have always loved doing it, but it isn't. And by the way, it comes for a lot of us. It doesn't seem like it's that hard, not compared to some jobs. Obviously, I'm talking about in relation to sports broadcasting jobs. It certainly doesn't seem hard. I mean, I won't lie to you. The morning, doing early mornings can be a grind physically. There's no doubt. And it's why, you know, morning drive radio hosts over the years, you know, have – there's a physical wear and tear of getting up at 3:30, 4, 4:30 in the morning every single day. But that's beside the point. The point is whether you're doing it in the mornings or middays or afternoons, when you're doing 3 hours every day, 4 hours every single day, a lot different than trying to put together for a four-minute sports cast at 11 o'clock, which, by the way, is, you know, can be a little bit different from your 6 o'clock or your 5 o'clock, but it's probably not that much different, except you might have a couple of highlights of a Wizards game or a Caps game. Imagine, you know what, you and I should have been doing local sports together, all right? The Sports Fix Channel 4 sportscast. By the way, Channel 4 doesn't even have a sportscaster. A lot of these places, the guy on Channel 9, who I always forget his name, because
I think it's Darren Haynes.
Darren yeah. is a full-time sportscaster, I believe, at Channel 9. I don't yeah. know about Channel 7. I can't speak to Channel 7.
Well, Scott Abraham.
Oh, Scott, of course. What am I thinking?
And he has, I think, Olivia Garvey.
Steve Garvey's daughter?
I don't know.
I think it is. I think somebody told me.
Really?
I think it is.
That
yes.
may be. I don't know. But anyway, I mean, Channel
Scott's
7
good.
Is yeah, Channel 7 is very, very, very active in their sports programming, I think, on their local news broadcast.
Fair enough.
And they specialize in at least local football. On Friday nights, they're all over the place doing that.
The high school football.
So I give them credit for that.
Yeah.
Yes, the high school football.
I mean,
I don't even. I used to watch Channel 5. I used to be devoted Channel 5. You know, when Feldy was there, and before that
with Buck.
Dave Feldman, and before that with Buck. But I don't watch them anymore.
I mean,
I don't even know if they have somebody on Channel 5.
First of all, I feel badly not immediately saying Scott Abraham because I like Scott a lot. I have him on the radio show. He has me on his show a lot. I don't watch a lot of local news. I mean, I just don't. I mean, look.
You know, and I do. I do. It's about the only
age.
TV news I watch.
Yeah, well, I mean, old people watch local news. Seriously.
Well, because they do news stories. It's not a talking head festival.
Fair enough. But when it comes to sports on local news, it's really much different, obviously, today than it was 20
yes.
years ago. I mean, everybody gets...
When people like George Michael and those people ruled the town.
I mean,
they ran the town. They ruled it.
George Michael made in 1985 like $2 million a year. Glenn Brenner got paid over $1 million a year. You know, Buck was at Channel 5. Frank Herzog was at Channel 7. These were highly rated portions of a local newscast. Now the
yes.
only portion of a local newscast that gets any ratings is weather. Because it's the
this
only
thing. This is why Channel 5 has to grab you now before someone else comes along.
Oh, stop it with this grab you now. But let me just tell you that what I was going to say is that Channel 4 doesn't – I don't think they have a sportscaster. Heather's told me that. Heather McDonough, who's the producer over there. I don't think they have a full-time sportscaster because Doreen's doing it sometimes.
JP's done a lot of football stuff.
JP Finley
on the
does Channel 4
on the news broadcast.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
A lot of Washington football stuff. They'll go to him on the the 5 o'clock or the 6 o'clock news or something like that. Yeah.
I've seen Doreen and Leon. I love Leon, by the way. I've seen Doreen and Leon do sports. I've not seen an actual sportscaster. If you tell me that JP's doing it, that makes sense because of NBC. In fact, it makes total sense. I don't know why they wouldn't
right.
just have one of the NBC Sports Washington. That is their, you know, they're the same company. Why they just wouldn't
yeah.
have somebody like JP just do sports? I mean,
well,
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if he does anything but football. But he's on the news broadcast doing football.
I'm going to ask him how often he does it. Whatever.
Yeah. By the way, this is the weather. You know, we got talking about the weather. Not the biggest event going on today is talking about the weather. Not the biggest astrological event going on today. Astronomical.
What is?
Today, the asteroid is going to come close to Earth, asteroid 7482. It's the closest an asteroid has come to Earth since 1933.
I did read something about that, yeah. Since what year, Tommy?
Yes. 1933.
And how close to the Earth? Do you know?
1.2 million miles.
Wow. That is close.
But you know what's scary? In 1933, the last closest asteroid, 700,000 miles.
Wow.
Under a million.
And what's amazing is that in 1933, I would imagine that there wasn't much expectation of it.
No. I don't think they could do like you can today, watch the asteroid on the Virtual Telescope Project.
Right.
You can watch it live at 3 o'clock Eastern Time on Virtual Telescope Project. They have a live stream. I don't know what kind of view you get of the asteroid, but whatever. I mean, you saw that movie, Look Up, Get Up. What's the movie that's...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Netflix. It's a political satire.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And it's with Leonardo DiCaprio and what's her name? Jennifer Lawrence. Don't Look Up. It's called. You got to watch this.
Don't Look Up. I'm not familiar with it. I haven't watched it.
Oh, well, I think it's on Netflix.
Okay.
And yeah, it's on Netflix. And it's a political satire, sort of like a Doctor Strangelove of its time, and it's about how an asteroid is going to crash into the Earth, mm-hmm. and nobody believes it. Nobody believes the scientists, and they just pretty much and all the farce it turns into. It's very timely, so I'd recommend it.
Who else is in it? You said Jennifer Lawrence. Leonardo
DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence. Jonah Hill. It's done by Adam McKay, the guy who does Succession on HBO.
Okay. I mean, I'm kind of looking for Kate something
Blanchett,
now to watch.
Meryl Streep is in it.
Okay.
I think she's the president.
What's it called again?
So Don't Look Up. You'll like this.
Okay. I have to tell you about one of my more, I think... Well, I've had a lot of embarrassing mistakes on air before. Many. Too many to count.
So have I.
But I had one this morning. I just totally went sort of brain dead on this one. So somebody sent me a tweet right before the show started. And it was a tweet from John Hinckley. And John Hinckley's looking for a band. Hold on, I'm finding the tweet for you real quickly. John Hinckley is looking for a bass player, is looking for a drummer, and is looking for a lead guitarist because he is forming a band. And he puts out a P.O. box for you to send your bio and resume for it. So I don't know why, because I actually, it's not that I am an expert on assassins by any stretch of the imagination. But if you gave me, you know, just a list of if you started listing assassins, more likely than not, 75% chance I'd be able to tell you who that assassin killed. And yet, for whatever reason, I go, oh, so Hinckley is forming a band. The guy who assassinated John Lennon is forming a band. And really what I was trying to do is I wanted to segue into a recommendation. You just gave me one. I've given you this recommendation. I doubt that you have already watched it. But I've now watched it twice, and I just love it so much, which is Peter Jackson's Get Back. And I started to talk about Hinckley as the person who assassinated John Lennon, who is now, you know, forming a band. And then I got into Get Back and why it's so great. And you haven't watched it, right? I don't think you have.
Well, I don't get
it's
the Disney Channel.
Well, get it.
I don't get it.
Okay.
No, I'm not getting it just for a Beatles documentary.
Oh, you would love it. And I'm not even a super Beatles guy by any stretch of the imagination, but you would love it. Anyway, of course, John Hinckley did not kill John Lennon. Mark David Chapman did. All right, so Hinckley shot Reagan. So I had that.
Yes.
I had that off for a little bit. But as I said, when I came back with the retraction, I said, at least on this day after Martin Luther King Day, I didn't make the mistake and say it was James Earl Ray. but anyway, that was embarrassing.
To be fair, other people have made that mistake because the two events happened so close to each other.
Yeah, one in 80 and one in 81,
And within a couple of months.
It was December. It was December.
Chapman was December 8th, 1980.
Right.
And Hinckley was March of 81.
March 31st, 1981. It was on the day of the national championship game.
So it was, the two events were very close to each other. So I've heard other people get them mixed up before.
Yeah.
So it's an honest mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think people are going to come down on you too hard for that.
Okay.
It's just that when you get rolling, nobody can stop you to tell you you made the mistake.
Well, it's funny because several people tweeted and said, if Tom, you, and I came back the next segment after multiple people texted me and said, I have a retraction here for you. But a lot of people said, too bad you didn't have somebody there. And Brendan, my producer, of course, wasn't even alive for any of these things. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't know him. But anyway, okay. We've got a lot of football to discuss. You want to discuss some football? Can we do that?
Absolutely, because it was such a glorious weekend of football.
We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Rams pressure is picked up. Kyler! Did he get rid of it? It's intercepted! It's David Long! Into the end zone for the touchdown!
Yeah, that was not a very good throw by Kyler Murray. There in the first half, he looked overwhelmed and panicked in the whole thing. We're going to get to football here in a moment, but during our little break, Tommy and I were talking about, because I said, you really have to watch Get Back. And some of you have reached out to me to say, great recommendation, or you've already seen it. I've watched it now a couple of times. It's fantastic just to see this period in time come to life. I mean, it was 70 hours or so of footage that was uncovered. Peter Jackson took it, turned it, it was part of the Let It Be documentary that they were filming at the time. It ended up, it led to that final appearance of them together playing live on a rooftop. You said to me, I said to you, I was never a massive Beatles guy. I mean, I like the Beatles, but that wasn't my go-to. You know, like our good friend Mark Stern knows everything there is to know about the Beatles. I have a couple of friends like that, and that wasn't me at all. But in this documentary, I just kind of fell in love with John Lennon. Like, everything about him in this documentary, he's funny, he's sweet, he's quick. And, you know, the relationship that he had with the other Beatles is interesting. And Yoko Ono, by the way, is literally hovering. She's no more than 3 feet away from him at any given time. And, you know, you learned that he very much, I think, viewed her as a mother figure because he had, you know, he had a tumultuous childhood, which I really didn't know the history of. Anyway, I really liked him. But you said something to me that you can, what were you saying about that your favorite Beatle reveals something about your personality?
There's some people that think you can tell, you can judge a person's personality by who their favorite Beatle is. You know, it's kind of one of these pop things to, you know, I mean, like John Lennon, if you like John Lennon, you know, it's a level of humor and intelligence and maybe being provocative. If you like Paul, you know, it's a little bit shallow. If you like George, you're very introspective. And if you like Ringo, you're just very fun-loving, you know, devil-may-care. I think I've got those pretty much described.
Who was your favorite Beatle?
Oh, John Lennon was my favorite. Look, I remember watching A Hard Day's Night when that movie came out. In 64 when the Beatles came over, and John Lennon was so funny in that movie, so great. I mean, that's when I really, you know, like decided that John Lennon was going to be my favorite Beatle. Let me make a confession here. When I was growing up in Brooklyn, you know, 9, 10 years old, we argued about two things, our friends and mine and us. We argued about baseball, and we argued about music. I mean, we used to go home and watch American Bandstand. It was on every day.
Right.
For 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, music was a big, big deal in Brooklyn. And I was on the wrong side of the Beatles argument. I used to argue with my friends that Dave Clark Five were a better band than the Beatles.
Yeah.
And the Dave Clark Five were a good band, but obviously I was on the way wrong side of that debate. But I've always liked John Lennon. He's always been my favorite Beatle.
Yeah, I think that my favorite Beatle, again, I'm not a Beatles guy, but my favorite Beatle, because my favorite Beatles songs were George Harrison songs. I think my favorite Beatle was always George Harrison. Plus, I think he and I share the same birthday. I think I remember that in February. But like Something and While My Guitar Gently Weeps are probably my two favorite Beatles songs, and they were both written and sung by George. But after watching this documentary, John's my favorite. I mean, he's just... I don't know, by far and away the most likable. Actually, Ringo's the most likable, you know, because he's just...
Ringo's up for anything.
Yeah, he's totally go-along to get along, but I don't know. I think maybe also the fact that John's dead, you know, and you see this guy at that point, you know, he is basically like 30 years old. He's a young person. He's super young at that point. This is 1969. So what he was 40 when he was assassinated, right? Wasn't he 40? So he's probably 29 or 30 years old, you know, at this point. And there was just something, and by the way, the Paul thing that you mentioned, what you learn about this is Paul is very much, first of all, I think a lot of people will say he's the best musician that was in the band, overall musician. And that there's no doubt that he was the alpha, you know. He was the one that sort of led the songwriting, led the big decisions. They all looked to him. And by the way, that's ultimately what sort of started to piss George off. is that, you know, George had this incredible creativity and wanted to write and was keeping all these songs to himself. I mean, Tommy, All Things Must Pass, debatably, is the best, you know, album of all of their solo careers. George's album, All Things Must Pass, it's brilliant, which I actually, like 2 years ago, I just kept listening to over and over again. But anyway, we could go on and on. Watch it. If you're a Beatles person, you've probably already seen it. If you're not a Beatles person, you're still going to enjoy it. Because you're seeing, by the way, you know, yesterday, and I think you tweeted this out, and my son sent this to me. I think my son sent me your tweet, actually, about this. Yesterday would have been Ollie's 80th birthday, right?
Yes.
And though the Beatles and Muhammad Ali, correct me if I'm wrong, those five people, probably the most recognizable faces on the planet there for about a decade.
You could certainly make that case.
Certainly, Ollie.
You know, it's funny. I mean, and remember, you know, you've seen the iconic photos of when the Beatles met Ollie.
Yes, Miami Beach.
You know, and Ollie didn't have any idea who they were.
He used a homophobic slur to describe them. He said, "Who are these, you know, F's?" He had no idea.
Yeah, he didn't have no idea who they were, but there's some great photos that came out of that.
Right. Yeah. That was before the Liston fight, right?
Yeah, it was in the early 60s and when the Beatles first came over.
Yeah,
I think 64.
Yeah, I think it's before the Liston fight. I think they had just gotten to America because he fought Liston in February of 64, and that's when the Beatles came over with their first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. And I think I have this right. Their first live show before Shea Stadium was at the Washington Coliseum. After their first appearance, somebody who's a real Beatles expert will be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but I know they played either their first ever U.S. live show, or maybe it was the second at the Washington Coliseum after they made their first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Well, you were right. The photo was taken on February 18th, which was before the Liston fight. In Miami Beach, Fifth Street Gym.
Yeah, because the Liston,
that's when the photo,
the
was
Liston
taken.
Fight, yeah. I believe, is February 25th, 1964. I believe that's the date of that fight.
So that was a week before.
By the way, Tommy, I would have thought if you had said to me yesterday, if we had been doing the show to yesterday, and you had said, "How old do you think Ali would have been today? Today is his birthday." I would have guessed older than 80. I don't know why, but. But then again, I mean, it is what it is. So he was born in 42. He was born in 42 and then won the gold medal at 18 years old in Rome, right? In 60?
In 60, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, one of the things, just one last thing.
Yeah.
When we leave Florida at the end of February, we're doing a road trip on the way back for a couple of weeks. One of the places we're going to is Louisville because I want to go to the Muhammad Ali Center.
I thought you did that last year.
In Louisville. No, dude. I've never done that.
I think that was your plan last
year. Last year we went to Sarasota for a week after we left Destin. Just sat on the beach for a week. Remember I tweeted that infamous photo of me sitting in a chair on the beach, dressed in all black, saying, "I'm on the beach, leave me alone."
Yeah, I do, and I told you that I really like Sarasota. I love that. What is it, St. Armand's or St. Armand's Circle or whatever? You know, right before you go out to like Longboat Key. I like that area. Yeah.
So I'm going to go to the Ali Center in March.
I could have sworn you told me you were doing that once before. I think you did. I think you were planning.
Well, we're doing everything we can not to talk about these NFL playoff games, aren't we?
So, all right, let's start with the most recent and work backwards. You want to do that?
Sure.
The game last night, it was a terrible football game. And look, I understand that Kyler Murray, you know, that the offensive line's a little bit in tatters. And obviously, you know, not having DeAndre Hopkins is a big deal. With that said, I saw a look in his eyes that you don't ever want to see in a guy that is supposed to be a franchise quarterback. By the way, I kind of saw the same look in Cliff Kingsbury's eyes. And sure.
Yes, I did too.
They both looked completely overwhelmed and nowhere near up to the moment. And Kyler Murray was the worst quarterback of the weekend. And there were a couple of bad performances. Jalen Hurts had a bad performance. Dak Prescott had a bad performance.
Dak Prescott, yes.
But Kyler Murray was shell-shocked. I mean, completely shell-shocked. Look, if you can't block Aaron Donald, he's going to ruin a game. And Von Miller now, all of a sudden, is starting to wreak havoc old Von Miller style. And that gives the Rams, by the way, a chance. I think in many ways the Rams' chances come more because of what they might be capable of from a defensive standpoint moving forward than even Matt Stafford, which I'll get to here in a moment. But I think Kyler Murray, and I did this on Saturday where I did this mini deep dive where basically I looked at all the quarterbacks drafted over a 10-year period from 2011 to 2020. I didn't count this past year. And basically 117 quarterbacks were drafted, only 10 have turned into franchise quarterbacks. You know, of the first rounders, 32 quarterbacks over a 10-year period, only 8 have turned into franchise quarterbacks. And of the top 11, because Washington selects at 11 overall, only 7. So that's 30. It's not even 1 in 3. I did it just to understand what the true percentages of hit rates of what's the hit rate on actually finding a quarterback, your true franchise quarterback in the draft. Well, it's a long shot. Like, if you've got a top 11 pick, you've got your best chance because you're almost at 1 in 3, but a first round overall is 1 in 4, and it's an 8.5% chance just in the draft alone. And I counted Kyler Murray as one of those franchise quarterbacks. And I didn't see a franchise quarterback last night. Again, missing DeAndre Hopkins, big deal. Offensive line in bad shape. But I saw a guy who was completely panicked and totally overtaken by the moment. His brain was moving too fast. His body was moving too fast. His arm was gunning things to people and missing by miles. And then the interception that we came into this segment with was just, you know, as old NFL films would say, a hairy high school play. I mean, it was really bad. He ended up with go ahead.
You talk about Cliff Kingsbury. You would have thought that, and maybe they did. Maybe they had a plan like that. But you would have thought that the pressure that they were feeling from the Rams would have been expected, and you would have tried to have game planned with that. And now, you know, every time with Jalen Hurts, with Dak, and to a lesser extent with Kyler Murray. I mean, these guys can run the ball, and it seems to me like the game plan offensively should have included some significant running by their quarterback. I mean, that's the only way you're going to back off that kind of pressure, is if they're afraid to come because you're going to blow by them.
I mean, Kyler Murray had 2 carries for 6 yards in the game. This is a guy that in some of their bigger games down the stretch, okay, when they played the Rams and lost, 7 carries, 61 yards. In the close loss on Christmas night against the Colts, 4 carries, 74 yards, 9 for 44 against the Cowboys in the win, 5 for 35 last week. Like now it didn't look like there was a lot of room to run. And the one thing that I would mention real quickly, in addition to them not having key players, is their field position throughout the game, their starting field position was horrendous.
Yes, it was.
But I just saw a guy that completely freaked out. And I mean, there was one throw where they're deep in their own territory and he gets out quickly to the right. And James Conner, the running back, is out there in the flat and he throws a bullet zipping by over his head from like 5 feet away. And you're like, oh my God, this guy is panicking. The Rams defensively with what they have, you know, in Miller and in obviously Donald, and A'shaun Robinson, et cetera, Jalen Ramsey, Troy Reader. Remember, they were missing their safeties in this game.
They had to get Eric Waddle off the street.
Weddle, yeah.
Weddle.
One of the big questions all season long, when people were talking the NFL, when the Cardinals, you know, had the best record at one point, you know, at 8-1, 9-2, is are they for real? Well, we found out. Now, it would make a difference if DeAndre Hopkins was playing. I mean, you could certainly say he's one of the top two or three wide receivers in the game. But they lost, you know, five of their final six games. You know, they missed out on an opportunity last week to win a division and to host a playoff game, and they just weren't all that. The Kingsbury thing, you know, look, they went, what did they win, 11 games or 12 games? I mean, that's a good season. We would take 11 wins and a playoff loss here. It was a good season for them, but it didn't end well. And I think there are questions about Kingsbury and Murray. I like a lot about Murray sometimes when I'm watching. And then other times I'm like, God, he's tiny. He can't see. And, you know, he takes big negative plays a lot.
I agree. And, you know, when it was 14-0, I tweeted out, there's only one answer for the Cardinals now. And I tweeted out a picture of my guy, Cole McCoy. And I got a lot of response for that. And a lot of people, like Bill Simmons and other people, seriously posted the same thing. Now, I was doing it jokingly, because if Kyler Murray couldn't get away from that Rams pass rush, Colt McCoy wasn't going to get away from it.
Well, you got,
you know, he would have been crushed probably by the pressure that the Rams were going to bring.
Well, you did get Colt at the very end of the game for the two handoffs to run the clock out, thankfully,
yes,
because I had the under. Smell test ended up going 3-3 on the weekend. I had the under last night in that game. Real quickly, my takeaway on the Rams is this. I love Sean McVay. I just, like, we do this segment on Tuesdays called What Did You Learn From This Past Weekend on the radio show? And there's a few things, but for me, is that Sean McVay is just an excellent, excellent football coach. And I know that they go for it in terms of talent and trading picks and adding big-time players like Von Miller and Jalen Ramsey, you know, in the last year. But that team's, you know, really, really well coached by a guy who can super communicate and lead. And the funny thing about the game is, you know, I've always been a Matt Stafford fan. Like, I've always said, put him on a good team with a good offense, with a good coach and a good franchise, and the guy would be an elite quarterback, or certainly something approximating an elite quarterback. The truth is that Stafford has not played great. He's had moments. Like, he had the long drive against the 49ers to tie it up, or to give him the lead, 92-yard drive, had the big drive to beat the Ravens. But he's, you know, he threw seven interceptions in his final three games of the year. And last night, he didn't have to do much. You know, he was 13 of 17 for 202 yards. And by the way, you know, the weapons, I mean, Cup, and now you add, you know, OBJ to it, who looked great last night. And by the way, what a job by Cam Akers. This was a guy that tore his Achilles, you know, earlier in the year, and he's back. I mean, it's really an amazing comeback story for Cam Akers, back who I loved in this scheme. He's such a great zone run kind of guy. It really.
And by the way,
yeah,
I read a story about his comeback, and they credit like the Rams training staff for helping him come back as quick as he did. And I guess this is what happens when your trainers aren't under investigation by the DEA.
Well, it's interesting. Like, this guy tore his Achilles before the season started. It was in training camp. And that was a big blow, you know, to them, because he was, you know, they moved on from their previous backs, and they're putting it all on Cam Akers. I remember thinking Jake Funk, the kid out of Maryland who they drafted in the seventh round, is like a perfect zone run kind of a guy, and I'm like, he's going to get a chance. And he got hurt too. But, you know, they ended up trading for Sony Michel, brought him in. But that is, I mean, we'd have to talk to trainers and doctors. But when you come back from an Achilles injury, so if it was in August, September, October, November, December, so basically 5 months, when that's an 8 month, 8 to 10 month injury sometimes, that's got to be, you know, either you're a natural healer or you have something in you that, like from a training or from a rehab standpoint, you're just able to do it. I mean, give RG3 credit. Remember, he was back and ready to go at the beginning of that season in 2013. A lot of people thought that that was a devastating injury. It was the ACL and it was the LCL, and it happened in January in the playoffs, and he was back and ready to go for training camp, all in for week one. You got to have a special kind of work ethic, I think, to get back. Or a special, you know, innate healing ability. I don't know. That's unbelievable. But he looked great last night. But
yeah,
the last thing on this is that I love Sean McVay. You know, this is a guy that has just been – his record, by the way, now as a regular season coach, you know, for the L.A. Rams, his overall record – hold on, I had it up here a second ago, and now it's gone, is 55-26 in five seasons in L.A. He's been to the playoffs. This is his fourth playoff visit. He just won his fourth playoff game. 55-26. The worst season was 9-7 in 2019. I mean, Kyle, Sean, take your pick. If you could go back, either one of them would do with Kirk Cousins as the quarterback. And this team here would have been, you know, winning a lot of games and going to a lot of playoff games and playing in a lot of playoff games. Maybe they wouldn't win a Super Bowl. Who knows? You know, and maybe they wouldn't because Kirk has a limitation. Or maybe Kyle and Sean have limitations, but he took Jared Goff to the Super Bowl. They won a playoff game with John Wolford at quarterback last year when Jared Goff was out in the playoff game at Seattle. But on Stafford, he hasn't played great, and they didn't need a lot from him last night. So I am going to be – I'm rooting for him because I like him, and I'm rooting for Sean. But I'm – a lot of people off the game last night are like, look out for the Rams. They play at Tampa. It's a three-point line. I don't know. We'll see. Two really good defensive teams, that's for sure. But Brady over Stafford, yeah. And I like Stafford, but I think he still doesn't look totally comfortable. That's all I'll say. He had a great year. You know,
but meanwhile, Brady looks like he's 22 years old.
My God. Wow. I'm glad the Monday night thing is over. I stayed up till the bitter end because I had the under in the game and just waited to see Colt McCoy make the last two handoffs to make sure there was no pick six for the over. I like these games upcoming this weekend, man. These are games where right now, God, I don't have a good feel for any of them. The action is pretty much split across the board on all these teams. There may not be a smell test pick this coming weekend. And by the way, that may be a blessing. Going back to the other games, the Sunday night game between Pittsburgh and Kansas City, we don't need to really talk about that. I mean, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, so that brings us to San Francisco, Dallas. Look, the bottom line is the Cowboys underachieved with that talent, which, you know, they did last year, but last year they had an excuse because they didn't have their quarterback, Prescott. But that's an underachieving bunch. I know they won 12 games, but six of their 12 wins came against the NFC East. Mike McCarthy is now 6-9, I believe, in his 2 years outside of the NFC East. You know I'm not a Mike McCarthy guy. You know, we had the debate and the argument. I think Rivera is a better coach. I don't care what the records say. I think he's a better coach. It'd be nice to have Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers if you're a head coach, because I think he's a complete and utter doofus as a head coach. And I think you saw that Sunday, as you've seen it multiple times this year. And if I were a Cowboy fan, I would 100% want to move on from Mike McCarthy. That team was undisciplined. That team wasn't prepared. The final play, running a quarterback draw with 14 seconds to go, was crazy. It was way too high risk. You can make a throw with 14 seconds, and if you execute it properly against the way they were lined up, you know, you can pick up 10, 12 yards, get down, and spike the ball. But a quarterback draw, that guy all year long was an in-game buffoon with clock management, as he's always been as a head coach. If I were a Cowboy fan, I would be begging for them to fire Mike McCarthy, and I would take either guy, Moore or Quinn. I'd prefer Quinn if I were a Cowboy fan. And if I'm a Washington Giants or Eagles fan, just like, you know, Eagles, Cowboys, and Skins fans were rooting for Joe Judge to remain, I'd be praying that Jerry sticks with Mike McCarthy one more year, because they will come up short as long as he's the head coach. He's a terrible head coach. And he totally benefited from having Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre.
Okay, I know that. I get that. You know, except for Joe Gibbs, there are no coaches who haven't totally benefited from playing with a great quarterback.
Parcells.
Phil Simms was a pretty damn good quarterback.
Okay, but the second go-round, they did it with Hostetler.
Yeah, I give that to Belichick more than Parcells.
Well, they
anyway.
Okay, go ahead.
But most of what you said is absolutely right. I mean, it was such a poorly called game. 14 penalties. 14. They almost didn't score as many points.
18 called. 14 accepted. Yeah.
14 accepted. That's unbelievably undisciplined. And the last, I mean, to try to defend that last play of the game, or last attempted play of the game. I mean, to run a quarterback, there's no defense for that. There's absolutely no defense for that call. And it really just was just an idiotic call. And again, I think that, you know, given the pressure that Dak was under, I just felt like, you know, he should have run. I know he's nursing an ankle. I just don't understand why he didn't run the ball more.
Well, him running this until the last
play of the game,
right? Which was their biggest run of the day. That 17-yard
yes.
run was their biggest run of the day.
Yes, I mean, I just thought if he had ran the ball more, and look at the 49ers didn't have a great game.
Oh, I
mean, you know, they didn't play particularly well.
Well, they did in the first half.
Okay. But then, like Kyle Shanahan, what's his MO? This is a guy who blew, what, a 26-point lead?
25.
In the Super Bowl, 25. You know, that's his MO. And it looked like he was trying to do it again in the second half.
Well, it brings up a fascinating question about Jimmy Garoppolo, because the only reason the Cowboys had a chance was Garoppolo did what he does, you know, and that is...
Yes.
You know, look really competent at times, and then at other times, he's a backbreaker. You know, a couple of things about this game, in addition to the penalties, which to me stands out as much as anything stands out. I mean, they were penalties of lack of discipline. I mean, Randy Gregory is a phenomenal talent. He was tackling people on third down. You know, the penalty from
he's only a good talent when he lines up on his side of the ball.
Yeah, well, but
instead of trying to line up on the other side of the ball.
I mean, there's constant, you know, self-inflicted false starts, jumping off sides. But the defensive hold on that last drive when he tackled the lineman was crazy. Gallimore's play where he ripped off the center's helmet. This was an undisciplined team. And the penalties were hurtful. It also hurt Dallas all year long when they didn't win the turnover battle. They were phenomenal all year long, led the league in takeaways. They only had one, and really it was, you know, a gift from Garoppolo. They could not run the ball, but in part because it was constantly second and 15, second and 20, you know, third and 25 because of the penalties. But the other part of this was Dak Prescott didn't play well. I mean, We can talk about the penalties and the coaching, and all of those things were significant influences on the outcome of the game. Prescott didn't do enough. You know, he's one of the top three quarterbacks in the league paid-wise, and he didn't deliver. He barely threw for over 50%. He had a terrible interception. He missed some guys on the 4th and 11 at midfield when they were down 23-17 against the zero coverage. He hurried that a little bit. Cedric Wilson had beaten his man. That could have been a big play. And he didn't play well enough. I mean, you had guys that I have on my list of franchise quarterbacks when I was going through the draft stuff, and Prescott's one of those guys. Don't get me wrong. I would take Kyler Murray and Dak Prescott tomorrow if I could get them over what we have now. Clearly. And I think Dak, by the way, is a good quarterback. I do. You know, remember, I've always liked Dak, even though I thought his rookie year at times was rough. But they couldn't run the football. San Francisco, by the way, Dallas got lucky that Nick Bosa got hurt in that game because he was wrecking the game early in the game. And they got lucky, and I give Dallas some credit in the second half, where the 49ers didn't have as much success running the ball. Look, the first half, touchdown, field goal, field goal. Three drives, three scores, 16-7 at the half. They were really efficient, really innovative as they always are, like McVay's team. Kyle, same thing. The 49ers are good. But the Cowboys, you know, had the fake punt and then the delay of game. They had, you know, the final call of the game. By the way, the bottom line on the final play is they ran a play that was too high risk for the moment in terms of the clock. A pass over the middle and a quick give up by the receiver where he runs the ball to the middle, hands it to a referee. They would have gotten the ball clocked, you know, and maybe it's a 10-yard gain instead of a 17-yard gain. But running a quarterback draw is a longer play, and Dak didn't get down quickly enough. He went for 17 yards, and then what happened afterwards, you can debate it all you want, but the bottom line is, whether the referee's slow to get there or not, the referee spots the ball. All right, the center does not spot the ball.
The player can't do it.
And so, you know, Dak afterwards and McCarthy bitching about the officiating, it was very un-Dak-like. You always say, you know, someone's track record has to be taken into consideration. So when he said what he said about the fans throwing stuff at the referees and complaining, I'm giving Dak a pass. It was an emotional moment, and there was a lot of pressure on that team. Going into the weekend, I think you and I talked about it on Thursday, I thought that Matt Stafford and the Cowboys had the most pressure on them going into this weekend. And the Cowboys failed, and Stafford did well. They won the game. He wasn't asked to do a hell of a lot, but what he did was good. But Prescott, I think, felt that pressure too, and they didn't deliver. They just didn't deliver, and so they were frustrated in the aftermath. I think it would be nice to hear from Prescott to say, I really take back what I said about the fans throwing stuff at the referees.
Nobody, I agree with you.
You know,
I agree with you. I think that, you know, Dak generally, his track record is that he's a stand-up guy, and I think it was a heat-of-the-moment thing, because I'm sure he was embarrassed by the way the game ended. And I'm not just depressed, but embarrassed. It was an embarrassing ending.
The other thing about that final play is, like, even if they get it clocked, it's at the 24-yard line. I mean, it's not like the odds are still, like, all of a sudden in their favor. They still have one play to score a touchdown from the 24. It may not be a Hail Mary play, but it's still, you know, a low-probability play. From the 24-yard line, one play. Would have been an all-timer had they pulled it off, because they did a beautiful job on that final drive to get the ball to the San Francisco 40-yard line before the 49ers played the sidelines there on that last thing. There was one other moment in the game that I just wanted to mention, and that was, you know, Kyle had a chance on the second-to-last drive offensively with a 4th-and-1 at the Dallas 49-yard line. And people were very surprised that Kyle Shanahan, with that running game, didn't go for it. First of all, Dallas had 3 timeouts left still. Secondly, it wasn't really 4th-and-1. If you looked at it, it was closer to 4th-and-1.5, 4th-and-almost 2. And yeah, I'm sure analytics say go for it, but Dallas had finally gotten a little bit of momentum. And if you give Dallas the ball back there at midfield with 2:50 to go versus punting it and having them have to go 85 yards to beat you, given that they weren't very good offensively at any point during the day, I didn't have as much of an issue with that decision as many did. The analytics people are going to say that it's fourth and one, and it really wasn't fourth and one. Again, if you looked at it, it was fourth and all, the super long one. And Dallas, you know, sure enough, by the way, they punted the ball, okay, and Dallas started from their own 15, and they got it to midfield and then got stopped on fourth down. You know, they get stopped on that zero coverage blitz where, you know, Prescott didn't hang in there and throw it deep or accurately to Cedric Wilson, who was all the way behind the defense at that point. So San Francisco got the ball back. And anyway, whatever. The 49ers are moving on. The Cowboys have once again not gotten close to the NFC Championship game since their Super Bowl years. And the McCarthy question, I think, is going to be a big question this week. Tommy, the other three games, I think, you know, the Buccaneers, it was chess, checkers, Brady against Hurts. I was disappointed because I really did like the Eagles all year long. Some of you, you know, on Twitter, my God, you overrated them all year long, 31-0. And I'm like, yeah, I overrated them when their over-under was 7 and I played over 7. And when they were 2-3, I bet them to make the playoffs. I cashed on the Eagles this year big time, and nobody was saying they were going to win the Super Bowl. But I'll take my evaluation of the Eagles. And if you bet any of what I told you to bet on the Eagles during the course of the year, you're welcome. But I did lose some of it back on Sunday for sure, because that was an overwhelmed team. I thought there were a couple of calls early that were terrible. The roughing the passer penalty against Brady was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
The holding against Kelsey was terrible. I thought the Eagles had a chance there early to set a tone, but whatever. The Bills were awesome. Josh Allen, one of the players of the weekend. I thought Josh Allen and Joe Burrow in particular were just phenomenal players on Saturday. I mean, Josh Allen was tremendous. They had, it's amazing. I mean, it's never happened before. The Bills had, other than the kneel downs at the end of the half and the end of the game, they had 7 drives and scored 7 touchdowns. I mean, it's never happened in the history of the NFL playoffs. 7 offensive drives, 7 touchdowns in bone-chilling cold weather in Orchard Park.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people are giving the Bills a chance at Arrowhead. I mean, they're only a 2.5-point underdog. If there's one early smell test possibility, it would probably be the Chiefs, because the public really thinks Buffalo is going to go in there and beat Kansas City. I kind of feel like they've got a chance for sure. The early Saturday game was the other competitive game of the weekend. The inadvertent whistle, they fucked it up. I mean, the game got bogerized. You know, this guy, I don't know how they keep putting poor Jerome Boger out there to referee games, but the whole game, as many of them in the past have with him, just get totally turned upside down. The inadvertent whistle should have meant a dead play. With that said,
yes,
I actually thought it would have been a touchdown without the whistle. I don't know that the play would have ended any differently without the whistle.
I agree with you. Absolutely.
So,
I agree.
And Joe Burrow is phenomenal. My boys and I got into this debate. Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, or Justin Herbert. You get your choice. Who do you want?
Josh Allen.
I want Joe Burrow, I think. But God, it's such a good debate because it's so close. I mean, all three of them.
Where's Taylor Heinicke fit in that debate?
It's so close between the three. I just think, look, if you told me that I get Ja'Marr Chase with Burrow, it's like a no-brainer that it's Burrow. There's something about Burrow that is... I think
what
special.
If you get Stephon Diggs with Josh Allen?
Yeah, but I'll take Ja'Marr Chase over Diggs. And
okay.
Diggs is awesome. But Burrow, man, I mean, how about listen to Joe Burrow's last three games, right? Playoffs, division on the line at the end of the regular season, and then a playoff game. He threw for 525 yards in their win over Baltimore, four touchdowns, no picks. He threw for 446 in their win over Kansas City, four touchdowns, no picks. And then in the playoff game, he throws for 244, two touchdowns, no picks. This guy is rolling, and Chase is uncoverable, utterly uncoverable. I just line up every single play and say our play is for number nine to throw it to number one, and no one can stop us. They are really good. It's going to be – that's a really good first game. Really good first game, Cincinnati at Tennessee. The big mistake the Raiders made, from my standpoint, when they got it down there at the end of regulation with a chance to tie, they spiked the ball with 30 seconds to go in the game. That was a big mistake. Huge mistake. They had plenty of time. You don't waste a down on first and goal at the nine with 30 seconds to go needing a touchdown. You want all four opportunities if you need them, and they wasted it. And that leads me to this final thing in terms of the weekend, Derek Carr. So many of you all out there love Derek Carr. I like Derek Carr. I don't love Derek Carr. I really like Derek Carr, the adult, the leader, he's got a little bit of a clutch gene to him. I like all of that about Derek Carr. I don't know where the accent comes from. He's from Northern California, and you'd think he comes from Appalachia, in the hills of North Carolina or Virginia or Kentucky. I don't know why he talks that way. His brother doesn't talk that way. But that aside, Tommy, I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback, and I think you'd probably end up, if you were going to sit here and do this, with him in the 13 to 16 range. But there is a leadership about him. What they were able to navigate this year with all of the issues the Raiders had, there's a lot about him personally that I think is really, really positive. But then again, I keep saying this to myself anyway, if the Raiders wanted to trade him, wouldn't that be a red flag considering they don't have a replacement? It's one thing for the 49ers to want to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. They traded up to draft Trey Lance. Why would the Raiders want to trade Derek Carr?
You're going to have a new general manager.
Right.
You're going to have a new coach.
Maybe, yep.
Right. So, I mean, those alone could be the reasons. You know, new GM wants to pick his quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, it could be something simple like that.
Yeah, but the thing is you still have to find the quarterback. You have a guy that's a top half of the league starter in the NFL. We've been through this for like years and years. If you have a top half of the league starting quarterback in the NFL, the only reason you bolt from that quarterback is because you think you've got an elite quarterback in waiting. That's the only reason you do it. Derek Carr.
If you're convinced Derek Carr is probably not the guy, the longer you wait to pull the trigger on him, the less patience, the less time you'll have in your tenure to do something about it. If you're a GM,
you put a good enough team around Derek Carr, you can keep going to the playoffs.
I know that, but if I'm the GM there, I want my quarterback. And if I got any questions about Derek Carr, the time to trade him is the minute I get there. Because the clock is running once you start the job.
Well, the Raiders have the 22nd pick in the upcoming draft, I think it is. Something like that. So,
right. Well, they get some draft picks if they trade him.
Yeah, but... You know, he's got 1 year left on his deal, so you're going to have to extend him, and he's going to get a big deal from somebody, okay? So that factors in. I think that Derek Carr pulls back a first-round pick. I do. And I'm not – by the way, if Washington ended up with Derek Carr, I would think that there'd be a red flag in my head over the whole over his availability, but it would be a big upgrade. I just don't think he's going to be available. I think he's good enough, and he's a good enough guy and leader that you're going to be hard pressed to think you can just, you know, find another Derek Carr out there. You know, the 49er situation is different. And as far as Jimmy G goes, there's a lot about Jimmy G that I like. And again, he'd be an upgrade over what Washington has currently. And he's not going to cost, I don't think, as much as Derek Carr. And he's got 1 year left on his deal. So you're going to have to, you know, if you trade for him, you're probably going to have to extend him. But, you know, it depends on what you have to give up. Look, they gotta shake every tree in this offseason. Every tree they got to shake. And I think that's what's going to fall out of these trees. The Jimmy G's and the Mitch Trubisky's, not obviously the Rodgers or the Wilson or the Watson. And I don't even think a Derek Carr is going to fall out of the tree. I just don't see him being made available. I don't see it.
You're probably right.
Anything else on these games?
No. I got something else I wanted to talk about, though.
I have a couple of things, too. We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Also, rate us and review us, especially on Spotify and Apple in particular. If you can rate us 5 stars and write a couple of sentences, really one sentence will do on Apple's review spot, that would be a big help for us. Also, this segment of the podcast is presented by MyBookie. Go to mybookie.ag or mybookie.com. Use my promo code KevinDC. Somebody tweeted me over the weekend and said, I didn't get the offer. It's because you've got to put my promo code into that section of the sign-up page that says, do you have a promotional code? Put KevinDC in there. If there's something already in there, erase it. Put my name in it. You'll get your deposit match dollar for dollar all the way up to $1,000. We've got, you know, 7 playoff games left, 4 this weekend, 2 the following weekend, and then a Super Bowl game. Lots of basketball as well. By the way, I just wanted to mention real quickly, because I meant to mention this at the end of the last segment. But this morning, first of all, Mike Garofalo from NFL Network. Is he from NFL Network? I think he is. Suggested that Washington should be interested in Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson should be interested in Washington, and vice versa. However I said that, if I messed it up, you get the point. I don't think Russell Wilson's going anywhere, people. Even if he wants to go somewhere, I don't see it. But would I be interested? Of course I would. Somebody tweeted me and said, you know, he is going to be 34 years old next year. Okay, he's Russell Wilson. He's got 3 to 5 really good years left. And then Jeremy Fowler wrote a story this morning for ESPN where he interviewed a bunch of NFL executives' predictions on quarterbacks for next year. And the prediction here was that Washington will trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. And one NFL exec said, quote, I have some concerns about Garoppolo outside of the Kyle Shanahan offense. but Washington has some in-breaking stuff that would be similar. It wouldn't be as much of an issue if you can define throws for him. Closed quote. Anyway.
Okay.
You have a couple of things that you wanted to get to, and so do I. I'll let you go first.
Okay, I just have one thing. Did you read my column?
I have not.
No.
Not yet. You sent it to me early this morning. I haven't read it yet.
Like early this morning, like 1 in the morning or something.
Okay,
like that.
Well, I didn't see it yet. I'm sorry. Give me at least a few hours.
You don't have to apologize. I wasn't looking for an apology. I was just looking for information. Uh-huh.
Okay, what do you want?
Okay, well, I wrote a column about the Nationals.
The phenomenon
big move
guy?
They made. Yeah, the international free agent they signed. This kid, I mean, this kid, if he was in the MLB draft, he'd be a top five pick. His name is Christian Vaquero. He's from Cuba, but he moved to the Dominican in 2020. He's 17, and here's the MLB.com scouting report on him. A potential five-tool player with lots of potential, Vaquero is one of the most dynamic international prospects on the market. He's also one of the most athletic. This kid is 6'3", 190 pounds, and he's 17.
Wow.
Okay? He's a switch hitter. He's a physical specimen with tons of raw strength and power. He can really cover ground in center field, shows a strong arm, and has a chance to be a plus defender at the position. He plays hard with lots of energy and has lots of natural instinct in practice and in games. So the Nats, I mean, you know, before they went into the lockout, you know, and the Mets signed Scherzer and there were some other free agent moves, and the Nats weren't doing much of anything to feel hopeful about. And I don't know what they'll do when the lockout's over in terms of free agents, you know, and addressing this season, the 2022 season. But right now, last week, they made a big move to the future by signing this free agent, one of the top international players on the market.
Yes, a friend of mine who's a massive Nats fan will occasionally send me these long things, and this one was subject heading The Phenomenon, or El Phenomenon.
Yes, that's his nickname.
Yeah, and I briefly read it. Okay.
Yeah. Now, the news also last week that it looks like they have a verbal agreement that Juan Soto's brother, Ilian Soto, is going to sign with the Nationals when he's actually allowed to sign.
Oh, really?
16. Yes. There were reports last week that, you know, there was an Instagram account. He was dressed in Mets gear, and everyone reported he was going to sign with the Mets.
Oh, boy. Because they thought Juan would?
Well, I don't know why they thought he was going to sign. Oh, he was wearing Mets gear. You know, he was working out in a Mets outfit. But there was a change of heart, and apparently Juan Soto really wanted his younger brother to sign with Washington.
Well, that's good news.
According to my sources. That's if you're reading tea leaves, that's a good tea leaf.
Yeah, I thought you were going to tell me he was all dressed in Mets gear because once Juan, you know, becomes a free agent, he's headed to New York. Okay, well, that's
good. No, just the opposite. Now, he's 16. It doesn't become official until he's 17. My question at the end of the column, you know, is will any of these guys get a chance to play with Soto when they wind up being major leaguers? That's still the question that's going to hang over this franchise every day until Juan Soto is signed or gone.
How old's Juan Soto now?
I think he's 23.
Jesus. And there, you know, and you just got all ginned up over a 16 and a 17-year-old. It's crazy about that sport, you know? Crazy.
I know, because you're projecting what a player will be like in 3 or 4 years.
Right.
It's really an art, not a science, no matter how many numbers you use. I mean, you know, picking these players to projecting how they'll be like 3 or 4 or 5 years into the future, it's still a remarkable thing in baseball. More of an art than a science, no matter how many numbers and statistics you can come up with.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
But it was good news for Nationals fans.
All right, I have just a couple of things also to finish up the show with. Number one is when we were having the football conversation, we failed to mention the game that Ryan Kerrigan had. It was great to see Ryan Kerrigan out there and playing as well as he did. He got a benefit, he got the benefit of facing Tristan Wirfs, who was banged up, and that's a big injury. Two huge injuries, by the way, this weekend. The Bosa injury for the 49ers and the Wirfs injury for Tampa, and also Garoppolo to a certain extent. But God, man, Kerrigan still does what he does and has always done well. He is a bull in terms of strength, man. An absolute strong man. The Wizards had their best performance yesterday. I watched the game because I bet the Wizards plus two. That was their best game, I thought, of the year. They were down to their third coach, Tommy, because Wes Unseld Jr. and Pat Delaney were both in protocol, and so Joseph Blair ended up coaching the team. So the third string coach ended up coaching the team. He was a former, they said this during the broadcast, a former Harlem Globetrotter at one point. But man, the Wizards were really, really good against a team that had been playing well in the Sixers. Just an overall balanced performance with a lot of really good performers and performances in the game. Kuzma, once again, I mean, 15 points, 16 rebounds, three block shots. I mean, the guy's really had an impact for this team. And now Hachimura's back.
Yes, he has.
Thomas Bryant had 15 points in 16 minutes. You know, the Wizards are 23-21. They're a good team. The East is just so damn competitive. It's too bad it's not one of those years, although maybe it's better if you get to the postseason, but it's one of those years where you just have somebody who's great and somebody who's decent, and then, you know, like five or six or seven teams, you know, that are all average, because the Wizards would rise above it. But the East is crazy because the difference between the number one spot and the number 11 spot is six games. The Knicks are in the 11th spot at 22-22. And they're only six games behind the top spot in the East. But the Wizards really have played well. This is a good stretch for them to come through this with all of their COVID issues, you know, the coaching stuff, not having Beal. And I know that they got lucky there with the schedule facing the Magic twice and the Thunder, and they shouldn't have lost to the Rockets or the Blazers, but whatever. I thought that was such an impressive performance yesterday. The last thing I wanted to mention, though, is this. So yesterday there was having all the basketball on all day long on the holiday. Yesterday there was a phenomenal college basketball game, but that's not really what I'm going to talk about as it relates to Purdue and Illinois, which started at noon on Fox yesterday. Matchup of, you know, two really good teams. Like, Purdue's got a chance to be a Final Four team. I think Illinois is good enough to make a deep run in the tournament as well. And Purdue had a big lead. They blew it late. The game went to overtime. Then the game went to a second overtime. And at the beginning of the second overtime, Tommy, Fox, the game was on Fox. They say, as the second overtime of this thrilling game, I mean, an absolute thriller of a college basketball game. For those of you in the Washington, D.C. market, we're going to take you away from this game and to the start of your game, which is Notre Dame against Howard. And I was like, what? And there, so sure enough, as the second overtime starts, but you can watch the game on our Fox Sports app to watch the rest of this second overtime. Well, I had no idea what was coming. What was coming was Howard, on Martin Luther King Day, was hosting Notre Dame, who for the first time in school history played a road game at an HBCU school, at a historically black college, you know, or university. And Kenny Blakeney, who's the coach at Howard, had played for Mike Bray when Bray was, you know, an assistant at Duke. And then was an assistant coach under Bray when Bray was at Delaware. So Mike Bray brought Notre Dame, an ACC school, into D.C. to play Howard in their home gym. It was a great atmosphere. Now, I didn't tune into that game until I finished following the Purdue-Illinois game online. Purdue won the game 96-88 in double overtime. But Howard played great in this game. The guy Settle, I don't know anything about Howard's team, okay? The guy Settle, number two, excellent player. And they really were very competitive in this game. They were down 11 late, and then they made a run, closed it to one. They had a three-pointer to tie it at the buzzer that just missed. But 71-68, they lost to Notre Dame. But I thought that was a good basketball game. I watched a lot of that game. I was upset in the moment. I was about to take it to Twitter, and then I thought, probably not the best idea to complain about losing Purdue and Illinois in the D.C. market for Howard's game on Martin Luther King's birthday.
No, not a good idea.
Yeah, but Howard played great. The atmosphere was phenomenal, and it would have been awesome if they had pulled that out. I was so rooting for them at the end of that game. But anyway, the Purdue-Illinois game was ridiculously good. Big Ten's really good again. It's funny, last year they shit the bed in the tournament, you know, after being the best league all year long. And who knows, that may happen again this year. The ACC, by the way, is terrible. I think the ACC's got like one ranked team, and it's Duke. I think they might be the only ACC team in the top 25.
Wow.
When's the last time that happened? Seriously. The ACC. When's the last time they only had one ranked team? Of course, I'm looking at the top 25 right now, and there may be a team that I'm staring at right now, Tommy, that is an ACC team right now. I just didn't know it with all the changes there. But no, Duke is the only ACC team in this week's top 25. The Big Ten has a really bad team in Nebraska. And then they've got other teams towards the bottom of the league, like Maryland, who actually aren't terrible, but they're not good necessarily, but they're not terrible. They're totally capable. Maryland should have beaten Rutgers over the weekend. They were up 11 and just totally, turned the ball over way too much in the second half. They play at Michigan tonight. That game, Tommy, when the schedule came out, Maryland at Michigan tonight, this was going to be a big, big game. When the season ended last year and over the summer when they came out with the schedule, all Maryland fans wanted was a home game against Michigan. Remember the Juwan Howard, Mark Turgeon sideline brawl in the Big Ten tournament, the dust-up between the two? And Hunter Dickinson being a total dick when he played in College Park last year. So this was going to be, they only got Michigan once and they're playing it in Ann Arbor tonight. Michigan's, you know, obviously Turgeon's gone. Maryland's not very good. And Michigan may be the biggest disappointment in the country. A team that was preseason top five is 7-7 overall and 1-3 in the Big Ten. They haven't won a game since mid-December. Now, they had some cancellations because of COVID. And their Big Ten games, they haven't even been close in the games they've lost. The only Big Ten team they beat was the worst Big Ten team, which is Nebraska. They're a 6-point favorite tonight in Ann Arbor over Maryland. Anyway, I think we've covered it all. What do you think?
I think so.
Where are you headed? Headed somewhere fun?
Well, actually, no. I mean, it's only 11:30 here. Not going out for lunch today, but I'll go out later for my usual happy hour rendezvous.
Do you have a black magic marker probably in your pocket?
Pompano Joe's. No. I learned my lesson.
All right. That's it.
You know, I still have that dollar bill. I'm going to bring it back to you as a gift.
Great.
When I get back,
I'll put it right next to my to my Dundee Award statue that you brought to me. Did you bring that to me, or did somebody else do it? You brought that to me, right?
Oh, my God. You're so pathetic. Of course I did. You're such a weasel.
I knew you did, but then for whatever reason when I said it, I'm like, wait a minute. Did somebody else bring that to me, or was it Tommy? All right. I enjoyed this, per usual. All right. That's it. Back tomorrow.